I think herd health is a combination of both the animal's health, obviously, their production, but also the goals for those animals. So whether it's a multiplier or a genetic site versus a commercial site, and what their goals at the end of the day are, as well as if it's an independent producer versus, say, a more of a vertically integrated producer group, then you'll have different goals with that those herds. And that all influences how I sort of practice in the barn in terms of what we're trying to achieve. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to making sure the animals are as healthy and productive as possible, and that they're meeting the goals of the producer.
The Swinet Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like
DietForge.ai. AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. When it comes to 25-hydroxy-D3 products, purity matters. Hy-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy-D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Learn more at hy-d.info. Top Pigs Norsvin, the world's most innovative swine genetics company.
Welcome, everyone, to the Swinet Canada podcast show brought to you by Wisenetics. We are dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the Canadian's pork industry. So my name is Miranda Smith, and I'll be hosting today's episode. And today I have here with me Dr. Jessica Law. So welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about advancing herd health through preventative medicine. But before we get started on that, Jessica, can you first give us a little bit of an introduction, like a background on yourself and how you ended up in your role today?
So I'm from Edmonton, Alberta, and I was raised near the University of Alberta. And our family's background is very much sort of urban. And I got experience with the animal agriculture when I went to the U of A in animal sciences. And I worked under Dr. Frank Robinson through the animal agriculture courses as an undergraduate TA. And then when applying to vet school, I ended up working with some poultry vets and some swine vets, and sort of fell into like where I am today through experiences with Dr. Madonna Gemus, who's a practitioner who used to work here in Alberta and is now down at Michigan State. And so through that and some research at the UOC, I ended up getting a job offer at Prairie Swine Health Services in Red Deer, Alberta. So I joined them about 10 years ago and recently became partner in the practice when we changed our name to Prairie Livestock Veterinarians. And I've been doing swine medicine full time since I started there for about 10 years now. So that's how I've ended up where I am today.
Okay. And do I understand it correctly that you have like an additional certification that not a lot of other vets have?
Yeah, I'm one of five board certified members of the Swine Health Management of Alberta, or sorry, not Alberta, American Board of Veterinary Practitioners. So it's a board certification in swine health management. And there's only five in Canada and one other practicing practitioner who has it in Ontario. And then there's about 25 or 30 members in North America that have it. And a couple of them actually practice in Europe.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. So let's get started on talking a little bit about herd health. So can we first start with like, what are some of the different aspects that are included in herd health?
Yeah. So I think in terms of herd health, it's kind of from top to bottom. Like when you look at the farm or from inside to outside, like you're looking at literally every aspect of what's influencing the animals day to day, in terms of your inputs, their outputs, what you're measuring day to day. So herd health is just like this big ecosystem is sort of how I see it. And when I'm in the barn, it really takes a moment to, you know, make sure that we're stepping back and looking at the 40,000 foot view. I think herd health is a combination of both the animal's health, obviously, their production, but also the goals for those animals. So whether it's a multiplier or genetic site versus a commercial site, and what their goals at the end of the day are, as well as if it's an independent producer versus, say, a more of a vertically integrated producer group, then you'll have different goals with that, those herds. And that all influences how I sort of practice in the barn in terms of what we're trying to achieve. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to making sure the animals are as healthy and productive as possible, and that they're meeting the goals of the producer.
Okay. And so what is kind of the role of the producer in that versus your role as a veterinarian?
Yeah, so it's super collaborative. I'm never going onto farm and just sort of telling them what they need to do. I'll give suggestions, but I really want to get an idea of what their goals are. And then if I start to identify things that are, you know, I am seeing as areas of opportunity where I know that they could get a little bit more health or a little bit more performance through health out of their production system or their farm, then I'll work with that with them on that. But essentially, when I come to a farm, I try to make sure that they know what my goals are for the day and what I'm planning on doing that day. So whether we're planning to look at reproduction or we want to look at their, you know, the health of their grow finish, maybe they're having some diarrhea issues or growth issues in a certain area. I try to make sure that I outline what my goals are for the day, because I usually will come in after looking at their data and have a little bit of a plan in place based on some areas of opportunity, as well as some other pieces that we maybe talked about over the couple months prior to the visit. And so, but I'll also reach out and say, you know, what do you want to focus on today? Because it's not just my goals. Obviously, I'm there to provide value. I'm not there to tell them what I think they should be doing. And so trying to get them involved and show me what, you know, what are their daily gripes and the things that are frustrating to them each day or that they're noticing. And then on top of that, sitting down with their staff, and talking about what they're experiencing day to day and things that they're noticing. Because if I don't do that, things tend to kind of get brushed under the rug that are actually like abnormal. For example, when I was at a farm a few years ago, I was just sort of trying to get an idea of what their daily issues were. And I sat down with the staff and they started to explain to me that they were having a lot of problems with a certain kind of lameness. And it's something that, because of the age of the pigs when I was there, I wouldn't have seen otherwise. And so we were able to really dig down and have conversations about, okay, this is likely coming from either transport or from what's happening in the nursery. And so we can actually do some preventative work at the nursery to prevent what they're experiencing at the finisher. But say, if I hadn't have sat down and had that conversation to get what their needs were, we really wouldn't have had, I wouldn't have been able to provide value on that front. Because just walking you can only do so much just walking the barn. And obviously being there and being in person is really important. And really, there is a ton of value to that and doing that routinely to see the changes in the farm. But there's so much that happens there day to day that we don't see as veterinarians. So making sure that the staff are super comfortable. And even if they're just pulling us aside when we're not in a big group, making sure there's that trust there is a huge part of it.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, because you only have so much time to be on a farm, whereas the workers are there every day. So they can pick up on things probably a lot quicker or than you can.
Yeah, totally. And I think like working with them to learn what's normal, because they may have been working there for the entire time that, say, a disease process has been expressing itself on the farm. And so they don't know what normal is. So once we identify that and we start training and working with them to say, okay, this is actually what's normal in this situation. And this is how we're going to try and fix it. But if we don't get to normal, I still need you to notify me that you're not seeing normal. And you're still seeing this disease process. Because I think there's so much that comes with just their experience and what they do. Because they're there 8 to 10 hours a day, and we're there for whatever it might be, like 1 to 6 hours every, 3 to 4 months or so. So it's a vastly different time. And they see the ups and downs. They see what the barn's like on the days when it's minus 30. They see what the barn's like on the days when it's plus 12, or the overnight between those two temperatures, like we've been experiencing. So
for sure. But on the other hand, you of course see a lot of different barns, so you can probably pick up on things in that way, because you know what normal is supposed to look like.
Totally.
Or you may have seen things in other barns that you then start to look in other barns as well.
Yeah. I mean, you glean so much from each barn experience that you're like, okay, how does this apply to, say, another site? Or how do we actually improve it here at this site based on what I experienced at these other sites? And also just like different genetics, different, feed programs, different feeders, different vaccination programs, different routines, different guilt exposure programs. Like there's so much that varies barn to barn, system to system, site to site, that is, even with producers that own multiple sites, they have a lot of experience from, playing around at their different sites. And that's really good too, because they can take things that work at one site and move it to the other one. So that's super helpful. But I was trying to think of how many animals I've probably seen since I started, and I couldn't even tell you what that number looks like. But the number of sites is pretty, we oversee quite a few sites across Alberta, Saskatchewan, and we're even working with other practitioners to go to their areas of the country to share knowledge and visit their sites, because you have so much different experience when it comes to the actual infrastructure. Like in Western Canada, we have a group of barns that will be built relatively similarly. And if you're just in those sites, it's great because you have exposure to those sites, but until you get out of that space and see other infrastructure, you don't get exposed to some of the opportunity areas. Like it may be something as significant as adding more inlets or adding more fans, and actually physically changing the barn structure to create more influence on preventative health. But you won't experience that without going to those other sites. So I think it's really important for producers both to go see other sites, if they can manage the biosecurity and the downtime. I know being away from your own site is really hard. But I do find that the producers that I've worked with that are able to go experience other people's farms, it's really beneficial. And that collaboration is super fun. Especially if they can do it with me, or if we go do it, separately, and it's actually the same site that we've been to, and we're like, okay, this is what we've pulled from that one. How would that work in your farm? In terms of whether it's like a daily process, or maybe it's a shift in a vaccine schedule. And it's little things. Like there's so much science behind what we do on the farm every day, but there's a ton of there's a bit of an art to it almost. And you don't get that experience. You don't get that experience from reading a book or looking at the label of a vaccine. It comes from time. So we're really looking at contacts and exposure time to different, different vaccine schedules, different barns, different ventilation layouts, different everything, different genetics, everything like that. So.
Well, and it's interesting that you're mentioning ventilation, because when I think of a veterinarian, it's not the first thing that comes to my mind that you'll be looking at ventilation, but it kind of goes to show that you are a little bit of, you're in every little aspect of the barn, because everything has an effect on health.
Absolutely. Like it all influences it in some way. And ventilation is a huge one. And so having really good relationships with specialists in those areas, especially when you're troubleshooting and it's not going the way you want, is really critical. So pulling in different people with different expertise is really, really helpful. But yeah, so the certification I have is swine health and management. So it's not just health. It includes ventilation. It includes, budgeting and finance and nutrition. There's a small aspect of it in there as well. And so it's very, the board certification kind of is a good example of all the things that you experience on the farm that you have to not have to provide input, but could provide input in that influences one another. And so you end up with a pretty large bucket of areas that you're trying to be an expert in, and you obviously can't be in every single one. So pulling in other experts is really, really important. But yeah, it's almost overwhelming some days when you think about all the different things that you could work on in a site. And I know sometimes producers get overwhelmed as well, because there's just so much to do in a day. And you just want it to flow. You just want things to flow properly, and you want the pigs to be healthy and for things to be consistent.
Yeah, that makes sense. So speaking of all like the different areas then, what would you say are the biggest areas of opportunity when you start working with producers on prevention or on herd health in general?
Yeah, I mean, it starts from like your guilt program. So bringing in any animals that you're bringing in onto the farm in terms of making sure that they're vaccinated appropriately and exposed to what they need to be exposed to, as well as like quarantine programs. So that you can expose them a little bit to whether you put an animal in there that has sort of the microbiome or the bacteria that are present in the farm, so they can expose them to the gilts prior to the gilts being dropped into the farm, because you just can minimize shedding and minimize disease flare-ups that way, as well as like their vaccine program. So there's pretty basic vaccination programs that we work on with gilts. And over time, we've noticed just how critical they are, just with experiences of, you know, someone pulling out a vaccine and deciding they don't need it or only doing one dose. And so more routine and preventative visits can really help minimize that. And it increases the amount of time that we spend with producers, so they can ask those questions instead of just trying it out and seeing what happens. Because sometimes it's to save a bit of cost, and at the end of the day, it just ends up being more expensive. And so having that really good trusting relationship with the producer, so that they can just feel free to flag something and send you a text rather than testing it out, without fully understanding what they might be risking. So guilt programs, really any sort of like vet to vet. This is something that I really learned when people enter the industry, which is becoming more common with like small holders, that it's not fully understood that you need a vet to vet when you're bringing animals onto site. Like our commercial producers are a lot better at this, but do slip up on it sometimes, especially with semen sourcing. Making sure that you've got a vet to vet and you understand the health of the animals that are coming in, or the animal products like the semen, as well as any sort of animal byproducts that might be coming into the feed. Doing really solid workups on that is really, really critical. For example, I worked really closely to discuss the risks of porcine plasma with a client. And we went as far as visiting the production facilities and talking about, you know, risk management on that front. And so the biosecurity aspect also kind of comes in line with the health aspect. They're so tied together. Like you make one misstep on one and the other one immediately comes into focus. And so anything entering the farm is like sort of where we start. And then it goes to preventative programs. So stabilizing the health of the herd, whether that's through vaccine programs or exposure programs, making sure that those sows are stable and healthy as they come into like the most stressful period of their production time, so that when they're farrowing and they're starting to get stressed out and they start to shed more viruses and more bacteria to their piglets, that perhaps we've vaccinated them for that and they've got the immunity. So either they're not going to shed as much, or they're going to provide more immunity to the piglet so the piglet can handle what's being sort of entering that piglet's environment. And then the piglet itself, so working with the producer on colostrum management, like all that day one care and early farrowing and late gestation care, everything that comes into the health of that piglet, because there's the biggest predictor of survivability through their lifetime is going to be how that piglet is set up since day one. So whether it's messing around with induction protocols and we're accidentally, you know, inducing a sow a little bit too early, or we are, you know, not moving litters around a little bit more than we normally do, and they're not getting their full amount of colostrum, all that stuff will just, it'll just, you know, flow downstream into the grow finish. And the best predictor of health in the grow finish and the nursery is going to be our piglet quality coming out of the farrowing barn. And so we spend a ton of time in that area because there's really, you can't spend too much time on piglet health and piglet care as well as sow care prior to farrowing. All of it translates to, you know, positives and negatives that can impact you downstream. Like a really good example, one that's coming into more focus, is just the gestation time that these animals need. So some of our genetics are needing more gestation time. So they're going up to 120 days sometimes. And that's way longer than we've ever anticipated. And that really messes with your flow. And so people sort of want to get those piglets on the ground so they can say they have this many days of age when they're weaning them. But the risk of that is that the time in utero is way more beneficial to that piglet than the time on the sow. And all of it translates into days on feed. So the longer we keep those piglets in the sow until the sow is ready to actually farrow and is triggering that process naturally, it's going to be more beneficial in the long run. And so maybe moving the sow to the younger room is better than inducing her so that she farrows with her own room. And so there's becoming more movement pre-farrow than we want there to be. And then that brings into like the question, okay, are we moving disease when we move a sow from one farrow room to the other room? Is there something else we have to put into place? And then, yeah, just to mention like the nutrition. Okay, so now she's in the farrowing room for a little bit longer and we're feeding her, say we're feeding her lactation feed instead of gestation feed. Like how is that impacting the growth? And maybe she's ending up being there for 10 days instead of 3 or 4. And so it's so cool just how it's a bit of a puzzle and it just all triggers like this domino effect. And I think that's my favorite thing is just sitting down with producers and their staff and just like puzzling through these things to think about, okay, what's the effect of this if we make this change or if this changes upstream from us? And how do we make sure we account for all the impacts? Because you change one vaccine or you change one protocol, or you change, you know, weaning days, or you change placement days, and there's endless dominoes that trickle down. So making sure everyone's involved is really helpful. And the more time we have to puzzle through that as a team, the more impactful we can be and the more value that I can provide as their veterinarian. And I think there's a larger appreciation for what we can do as a team versus everybody kind of working in their own little silos.
So it's really interesting that you mentioned that the gestation time has gone up to almost like 120 days. So it sounds like that's something like a change in our industry that has been slowly happening in the past, I don't know, maybe 5-10 years or whatever. So do you know of any other things like that that have been changing that maybe like we're now seeing more of than before?
Yeah, I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things that they talked about that which I thought was really interesting was just the work that's being done on osteochondrosis in pigs and lameness and the effect of growth rates on lameness. And when you select for osteochondrosis, when you select for growth, you're selecting for osteochondrosis. And part of it is just like the vascularization of that bone and the ability to create the cartilage for it to grow properly. And the faster the animal grows, the less likely that is. And you see that in horses too. And they have much different techniques to manage it that we don't have. So we really have to work towards the health side and the prevention side to make sure that that is all accounted for. And I think some of it reminds me of like the turkey industry in terms of selecting for like really big breasts on those muscles, and they can't mate naturally. And so at the end of the day, they've managed it as an industry. But it was something that was pretty there was quite a few consequences, and it affected the entire industry when it happened. And I kind of foresee some of these things that we're seeing in terms of just the shift that we're dealing with a different animal than we were, you know, 10, 15 years ago. We've exceeded incredible average daily gain and exceptional feed conversion to get a really high, like really good producing animal that, you know, tastes good at the end of the day. But there are consequences, and you kind of don't know what they're going to be until you've headed down that pathway for a little while. And unfortunately for us, we have pretty much a 3 to 4 year turnaround time on the genetic side in terms of actually, like, you know, pumping the brakes and turning around. Like, it just takes a while, as much as all of us want the change to be made right away. But there was quite a lot of talk at this conference about that. And I thought it was fascinating. And it just goes to show just how interconnected, you know, health and performance and production are, because inevitably we're going to be dealing with it on the health side, and we're going to be trying to treat it with anti-inflammatories and injectable medications or water medications and coming up dry. And until we really dig down into it, and confirm, yep, this is actually osteochondrosis, or this is maybe an effect of the growth, then we have to pull in the nutritionists, we have to pull in the genetics, we have to pull in the production team and think about, okay, how do we actually approach this? Are we going to approach this from the top and go back to the source, or are we going to approach this from, can we slow them down, which is, we've shown, isn't super practical. And isn't a super good use of our resources. But yeah, if you go back to selection on that front, there's a lot that can be done. And so it's really cool that some of the people that are involved on the selection side and the genetics side, what they're looking at. And it's nice to know how in depth they are in terms of looking at those health, different health sort of proponents that all factor into the well-being of the pig in the long term at everybody's different sites.
So the osteochondrosis, does that just mean that the bones are not as like firm or like strong, or like?
So osteochondrosis is actually like, it's a deformation in the cartilage in the bone. So it can happen in any joint. And it's just when the vascularization to the edge of that bone where it meets up with the joint hasn't completely formed the cartilage layer for the most part. And I'm not a professional, and I'm like not super well versed in this. So if I mistake on that, like that's my fault. But basically the cartilage layer is, it should be pretty smooth and consistent across the joint, in the bone. And so when it rubs together, it glides smoothly. And when you got osteochondrosis, it's more or less a divot in that cartilage development. And sometimes it'll progress to something called osteochondrosis dissecans. And that's when the cartilage has actually lifted off and you get a flap. And you can imagine humans, if we have any sort of arthritis or anything in our joints, like it's incredibly painful. So sometimes you end up with animals that are three-legged lame or not putting any weight bearing. They're not weight bearing well, or they just look very painful. And all it could be is just a flap in that joint is creating that pain.
And do you then see this mostly in sows or in grow finish pigs, or both?
You'll see it in both. Yeah. So you'll see it in sows. You'll see it in boars. You'll see it in grow finish pigs. Basically any animal over the age of like 3 months, you can start to see it.
Very interesting. Goes to show, but things keep changing in our industry.
Yeah. It's never going to be boring.
No, for sure. Okay. So like, how do you work with producers? Like, or what do you feel you do differently with producers than maybe other vets?
I don't know if there's anything necessarily that I would proclaim to do totally differently than other veterinarians. The things that I try to focus on in my practice are a lot of education. So a lot of resources for producers so that they stay well informed. I think everybody, when you own a business, like you're really digging down into your own business, and sometimes you can lose sight of what's happening in the larger industry. So I just try to keep our producers informed. So whether that's when I'm on farm, I'm just keeping them, like, just like we're talking about the osteochondrosis, you know, I'll throw that in, we'll talk about that. I'll keep them apprised of information that's coming up and coming and things that they may be interested in. And then we work really hard on the education side and communication side with their team, making sure that protocols are super clear, everything stays up to date on a routine basis. They're able to access information they need at any point in terms of the products they're using, trying to minimize confusion. Lately, we've had a lot of like generic medications coming out because the antibiotics that were created 10, 15 years ago, they've now had their patents are, or not their patents, but their licensing is sort of expired. So now generics can come onto the market. So for example, different antibiotics may have three or four different companies making the same antibiotic, and they all have different funny names. And so just working with them to create, you know, reading material or posters or anything we can do to minimize confusion on farm has become really a focus point of our clinic. And so we have staff that work on Canva and create posters and different, you know, labels for their products so that we are making sure that people understand what they're using for treatment, why they're using it. And if it does change, they know why it's changing. So making sure that flow of information is really clear. Something else we do differently is we give the producers a lot of options. So really like to make sure the producers are driving their bus and that we're not trying to dictate what they're doing. I really try to make it sort of a consensus decision when we're working on protocols. So in terms of timing of medication or treatment, obviously I'll, or vaccination, obviously I'll contribute with like what I think is the best options, but it's never, if something is the gold standard, it doesn't mean it's going to get executed. So say you need a two-dose protocol, or the gold standard is a two-dose circovirus protocol for a piglet, but the farm just doesn't have the capacity to give that two-dose protocol, then we'll work to do some blood surveillance to confirm that we could actually go with a one-dose protocol, and then analyze the data to make sure that we're not compromising the health of those pigs or impacting their growth and in doing that one dose protocol. So yeah, trying to provide options as well as communicating why I'm giving them those options and giving them the ability to not dictate, but yeah, sort of have that consensus in how we make the decision.
Is there anything else that you would like to talk about today when it comes to preventative medicine or herd health?
There's a bunch that I would want to keep talking about, but I really love this industry and I find myself thinking about my job probably more than is healthy. But I think right now we're just, you know, with the, we're currently experiencing some foot and mouth disease in Hungary and Slovakia. And we're looking at, you know, border changes in terms of being able to import products from those countries, as well as all the work on that's and outbreaks of African swine fever. And so I think now more than ever, like biosecurity is becoming something that is just like hot topic in regards to preventative medicine. And it can't be forgotten. And it's something that becomes so such a normal part of our day that it sometimes slips or sometimes becomes, we round the corners on our biosecurity practices. And I think just constantly having that conversation around biosecurity, whether it's how you manage your dead stock loadout or visitors, all of that stuff is just something that trying to keep that conversation front of mind and throwing in tidbits about it every time you're talking with your staff, maybe once a week at your weekly meeting. I was saying to one of my producers that maybe it could become like a safety moment. We have a biosecurity moment. I come from a background of like working in the oil field. And so I'm very used to safety moments where we have like tailgate meetings at the beginning of the week or the beginning of the workday. And I think getting biosecurity into those conversations is probably something that could really benefit our industry.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
It's time for our famous three.
WiseNetX turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetX.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Okay, well, that then gets us to the final three questions. So I don't know if you've prepared any of these, but the first one is like, what is your favorite swine-related book or resource?
Yeah, I feel like a broken record on this one, but Diseases of Swine was probably mine and most other veterinarians' favorite resource. I'm just looking over at my bookshelf right now. The other one I really, really love is Antimicrobial Therapy in Swine. That one's always been a constant in terms of being able to reference back to that. And with like judicious use of antimicrobials and everything, I constantly am having to remind myself of the different classes and usages and, you know, what parts of the body those antimicrobials are effective on and that sort of thing. So those two are definitely my top two.
Okay, perfect. What about resources outside of the swine industry?
It's not really a book, but it was recently part of the Canadian Agriculture Leadership Forum, which was hosted by Kristen Cumming and Ben Woolley. And that was something that was kind of like on the leadership side and business management, that has become massive. And the people I've met in that forum have been fantastic.
Great. Well, and it's so good to have those connections, right?
Yeah, it's so helpful.
Okay. And then the last one, in your opinion, what sets successful swine professionals apart from those that are not?
I think sharing knowledge is huge on this front and being open and putting your ego out of the way. I think this one and being open to other people's feedback, I think this is a huge one that keeps people out of their silo and open to learning. And I think this will be massive in the long term because we're really seeing younger people entering the swine industry that are looking for colleagues that are not necessarily in their own business or looking for other people that they can learn from. And I think it's really important to make sure our industry doesn't stay or doesn't become siloed and that we constantly are having that dialogue between different areas of the business and of production and veterinary medicine, but also different companies.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me on the Swine at Canada podcast show today. So that concludes another episode of the Swine at Canada podcast show presented by WiseNetX. So thank you, everyone, for joining us today. If you like this one, make sure that you subscribe to our future episodes. And I hope to see you next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.